Anyway, we are we're heading over to Knock Shrine, to Knock Parish, to link up with the rector of Knock Shrine, the parish priest of Knock, and indeed Father Richard Gibbons. You're very welcome indeed.
Thank you, Adrian. Good to hear you. Good to talk to you.
We, obviously, today is a very special day and has been as a day of pilgrimage to Knock Shrine for the Feast of the Assumption. But if you wouldn't mind, Father Gibbons, bring us, for the benefit of those who know little about Knock other than it is the probably one of the best known throughout the world, the shrine at Knock and Knock itself, with its basilica, is a massive attraction with a million and a half people, visitors each year. But today is the Feast of the Assumption. But might I ask you to go back to 1879 and this rural village out in the middle of nowhere, and I can say that, and you can too, because we're from Mayo and we won't take any offense. Tell us about the apparition at Knock itself.
Sure. Well, as you say, it occurred in 1879 on a Thursday evening at about 8 o'clock on the 21st of August. It was raining, which is no great surprise to anybody, I'm afraid, at that time of the at that time of the year. And in the evening, as people were returning from work and completing a hard day's work and trying to keep bread on the table and all the rest, somebody saw a light at the gable end of the parish church. Now, you're quite right, it was out in the middle of nowhere. There was nothing really in Knock, a few village houses around the parish church, and that was it. Then news got around that there was something happening at the church, so people came from their doors just to see. One person was working in a field about maybe half a mile away from the church and thought it was on fire with the light that was going on, and he made his way just to see what was happening. So basically the entire village turned out to see what was reported as a vision of Our Lady, St. Joseph, St. John the Evangelist, an altar, a lamb, and a cross, with what others described as hovering angels, if you like, hovering around the altar itself. Now, that was quite an intricate and sophisticated vision for its time. As somebody, as I say to people when they ask, well, was it true? You know, if you want to perpetrate a hoax, you don't start adding in a whole raft of other things. You keep it simple to Our Lady if you want to keep the story from unraveling. But here we had a huge, intricate and very complex vision that was seen independently by various different people. After that, people started coming to Knock, and then a commission of inquiry was set up within months of the apparition itself to verify it, to see if the people weren't experiencing what was called a mass hallucination or anything like that. So a scientific investigation was part of the day, really, was established with professors from Maynooth and various other different experts. And after the Commission of Inquiry had met and evaluated the testimonies, they found it to be, the testimonies given to be trustworthy and satisfactory.
And now, there are numerous
framing.
If you
note the framing of the words, that was important. The church just didn't come out and say, yes, there was an apparition. They were saying that the testimony of the people was trustworthy and satisfactory. So it acknowledged what the people had seen. And then over the years, then, Adrian, it grew in terms of attendance. And as it progressed through the successive decades, it was built up in various different ways.
Now, just to be clear, We're not talking about one witness. You're talking about actually a number of witnesses who didn't all get together, but were reacting, and as we know, that was long before electricity, before the possibility of strobe lighting or anything else. But the Commission on Inquiry, that wasn't an easy process. They really took each of the witnesses aside, and they were able to indeed verify what was witnessed without any variation in the story.
That's right. They kept them separate, yes, in order to verify, so that they could pick holes if they weren't telling the truth or if they weren't corroborating. And they found that practically everybody had the same site. People came independently of their sighting, so they didn't all come together, like you say, and then see the
right. Yeah.
It was seen from different locations. It was called independent attestation, which means that everybody independently saw it of one another. So obviously they didn't have mobile phones or camera phones or anything back
right.
in those days, so they couldn't influence the thought of another person. It was seen objectively, independently of one another. Now, interestingly enough, there was a criticism or an allegation made that it was what was called became the magic lantern theory. That even in those days, as cameras and photography was coming into its own, that somebody made the claim that it was somebody perpetrating a hoax on the people by projecting an image onto the gable wall of the old church from a distance up the village, which was quite an incredible thing to put forward, because as you can imagine, any small village or any townland, even today, you cannot keep anything quiet, Adrian.
Hardly.
I defy you anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, for to set up such a complex projection in 1879, when really the technology wasn't really there, but that was put forward, and people took it seriously, and they said, right, well, let's test this. And they did test it. And they brought down equipment from Dublin to test to see if this was possible, and they found, of course, that it was an outlandish charge, because you could follow the light projection back to its source, if you know what I mean. So that's only getting very technical now about the whole thing. But what I suppose my main point is that the Commission of Inquiry was very thorough, very, very, very thorough. And the church was very, even after the Commission of Inquiry, quite a lot of our own priests refused to believe that anything happened to Knock at all. And so there was still quite a bit of debate in the successive decades immediately after the apparition. And it really, it wasn't until 1935 that, with the visit of the Archbishop of Tuam to the shrine, that really Knock, if you like, took off, for want of a better phrase, in terms of greater numbers of people coming.
Yeah, but actually, you know, why, maybe you can shed some light on this, because as a young fellow, I, from Attymas, you were from, of course, the rich metropolis of, you were the other side of Lewisburg, so you wouldn't have known much about the foot of the Ox Mountains in Attymas. But I did know and witnessed great numbers of parishioners, some of them indeed, and obviously I was born after the war, or about there anyway, but there were no cars, there were no buses, transport, and yet so many thousands of people would come to Knock for the 15th of August. Many of them came walking, maybe A lot of the elderly might come with an horse and cart on a pony and trap, but they marked the 15th of August and the Feast of the Our Lady of Knock and the Assumption. That was the biggest day of the year, and so many people had marked that day as, again, as pilgrims to Knock Shrine. My God, they
yes, it was a very important day.
Yeah, and I suppose the 15th, even up to today, is quite an extraordinary. It's an extraordinary sight. There's a tradition of people walking to the shrine very early in the morning. So, like, let's say for on a normal pre-COVID world, on a normal 15th of August, we would begin at the shrine here at 5 a.m. with confessions. Our first mass will be at 6, and we would deliberately put that on for the walkers that would have arrived in their hundreds from all over the place. And later on then, over the course of the day, about maybe over 20,000 people would visit in that day from early morning until our rosary procession, which will conclude the day's events that evening at about 9-10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so it's an incredible feast day.
It is. And but throughout the year, to have and you know, a staggering somewhere between a million and 1.5 million visitors to Knock, many of them pilgrims, but one of the truths and features is that Knock has actually been a great magnet for people, not necessarily Catholic, but for those you know, who come to Knock and have that feeling, that aura, that you know, that great spiritual experience in Knock as well. And the tradition of saying the rosary, walking around the chapel, the shrine, and indeed with due respects to your good self, the basilica came much later. But tell us about the basilica. First of all, the basilica, you don't find them just about anywhere. Tell us about the basilica and how that came about.
Sure. Well, Monsignor James Horne, who's kind of a character that you can't avoid in Knock when you're telling the story of Knock, arrived on the scene in the late 1960s. He's the guy that famously built our airport. And he was here as a curate, and he took over then roughly around 1970 or so, but in 1973, in preparation for the centenary of the apparition in 1979, he proposed that a larger church was needed in order to cope with the numbers, thousands upon thousands of people that were coming to Knock, simply to get them in out of the weather. And he proposed, he didn't call it a basilica, and he didn't intend it to be a basilica. He just intended, and I saw the original plans, it was simply called Church Shelter. And this was just simply a structure to get thousands of people inside. Started in 1973. It was originally supposed to be costed at $500,000 old Irish pounds, as we call them. That's really before the euro and before later currency. But the cost escalated to 2 million Irish pounds in those days. You're talking roughly roughly today about maybe $40 or $50 million, which was a phenomenal amount of money if you were to construct the basilica again. It was a huge building made to hold undercover 10,000 people. It took 3 years to build and was constructed and dedicated in 1976. And people were so happy to finally have somewhere to go get in, if it was raining, which kind of happens quite a lot, that they were so delighted with this building that they give thanks to God for it. So it was constructed in 1976, and then later on, as preparations were building up for the centenary, Pope John Paul II, St. John Paul II, was elected in 1978, and he agreed that he would visit the shrine and visit Ireland in 1979 for the centenary, specifically for the centenary of the apparition. And so he arrived in September, and upon arrival, and not to unknown to Monsignor Horn and the people here, he was so impressed by the size of the basilica, by the size of the church, and the numbers of people here, that he immediately raised it to the status of basilica. Now, just for your listeners, there are roughly around maybe 2,000, a little over 2,000 basilicas in the world. That are, these are churches raised to basilica status. It's an honour for the particular church for a particular area. On the island of Ireland, there are two basilicas. We have one, and the other one is the basilica on Lough Derg. So there are only two here on this island. So Pope John Paul raised it to the status of basilica, and after that, then it was known, obviously, as the Basilica of Our Lady Queen of Ireland. And it continued to be at the center of having of devotional life and masses. And then in 2016, we after 2 years and 3 years of planning, we completely refurbed the basilica because it was in need of massive refurbing. In fact, the only thing that was left of the basilica were its walls standing and its foundation.
Then
we refurbished the basilica.
You know you were... Father Givens, but you would know you're from the Lewisburg area because you very conveniently now say we when everybody knew that you put the hook on everybody for a very much needed, not only upgrade, but you could say other than the walls, you and, of course, your great... number of supporters throughout the world, in no small part, you know, here in the United States and in North America.
Absolutely.
That yes, was a massive undertaking, and yes, to keep the character of, you know, the original basilica again was that was a great feat. You know.
Well, we had put an awful lot of work into it. We really did, but we wanted to keep the original character and also to be respectful of what was there. And I think what turned out in the end to be a wonderful place now to pray and to celebrate Mass and just to for people to come in a comfortable space. Now it now holds 3,700 seats. And you can get undercover with people standing at the back, which we have several times during the year, especially for the novena. You can have up to roughly 7,000 or 8,000 people. And then we have a massive mosaic of the apparition itself, which we had fabricated in Italy. And the painting was made by an Irishman and then sent out to Italy. And we had the mosaic then put in. It's a huge, huge mosaic of the apparition. If anybody wants to go online on our website, they can see it all there and the story of it. So it was marvelous. And, of course, we had to go fundraising, and we did that in this country and over with yourselves in New York and elsewhere. And I'm hugely thankful to your listeners and to yourself, Adrian, for helping us out at that time and the great support that you gave us in terms of helping us to do that. And I want to give a big shout out and thank you to all our American friends and all our New York friends for helping us with that. It's something that we can all be very, very proud of, especially as a nation. It is our national Marian shrine. It holds a huge importance in all our lives. We've been described by several nuncios here as the spiritual capital of the country, and we don't take that lightly. So. Well, we have plans as well for the future. But I suppose this year is such an odd, bizarre year that we've now had to postpone our novena. We've had to close down for the 15th of August, which is today, and unprecedented. But we had to do it because, unfortunately, there are cases escalating in the country again with COVID-19, and we have to do everything that we can to protect people and to keep them safe. And we that's why we took the decisions of postponing the novena and also of locking down for the 15th of August. We just wouldn't be able to handle the numbers that would have normally come.
You know, which prompts the question, at this point, you know, to have such a magnificent and accommodating area, including the original church, the Basilica, the massive numbers of people, you don't have a slush fund to keep things going. You know, at this stage of the game, how are the expenses, the day-to-day expenses, being covered?
Well, our season has really been scrapped for all intents and purposes. And we don't have reserves, unfortunately, because we're only after coming out of a major fundraising project, not only for the Basilica, but also for the papal visit in 2 years ago.
Yes.
And we were on the way of clearing our debts by the end of this year, but COVID hit and threw all our plans out the window, like every place else, really, Adrian.
Sure.
And like all churches all over the world. So we will be, we were able to take back 80% of our staff, but we don't know what that will mean now for the winter, because if this COVID ebbs and flows, it depends on whether we open, whether we close, and what goes on, or what happens if there's going to be another lockdown, all of that kind of thing. But we exist freely with our online mass cards and our candles, and simply donations that people send into us online,
right,
which they can do online. And they're small, like, as we say to people, look, whatever you can do, it could be, let's say in terms of dollars, it could be any $5, $10, $50,
yeah,
$50, whatever it is. It doesn't make any difference. Like, as they always say, every little counts. So
right,
that's what we're encouraging people to do. And I think, you know, if we encourage more people to do that for those small amounts, it's a possibility for them doing it, because people have an awful lot of expenditure themselves, even.
Right.
Because they're eating into their reserves and their own reserves, and we understand that completely, and that's why we're saying, you know, $5, $10, it doesn't matter, anything at all, and that helps us. And I think, and people are good, and eventually, Adrian, we'll come out of this together, and whether it's through a vaccine or something else, we will
right,
go through this together. And, you know, maybe this time next year when I'm talking to yourself and Anya and to your wonderful listeners there, I'll be reporting full houses across the board here and a bigger and better 15th of August than we've ever had before. And hopefully we can do that.
Hopefully, indeed. And, you know, we're talking about a vaccine. The tremendous faith you know, that before and after 1879 that has kept a lot of people going, the faith is a comforting, very comforting position to be in. But there are and have been a great number of people who went to knock, who had and in fact, experienced miracles which took place at Knock. And again, that didn't require any ecumenical board of inquiry. There were people who went to Knock and who were cured, who were where medical evaluation and help didn't work, their experience in being at Knock and being at the shrine is evidenced throughout for as far back as we want to go.
Yes, people have been cured. They send in testimonies to us. Now, we don't take them any further. We ask the people if they want, whoever sends in, like, let's say they got cured from a particular illness,
If they want to take it any further, we have a commission of inquiry ourselves, a medical commission, and we carried that out for a very special case. In fact, the first in Knock history to record an official healing. While there may have been many others, but they didn't want to, they didn't want it to be investigated or to have any publicity associated with it. Marion Carl is the case in point. She had MS, and just last year, in September of last year, she was it was officially recognised here in Knock as a healing. Now, it took 30 years to investigate that. 30 years.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that the church is in no rush with these things, because medical science can evolve over quite a period of time, whether short or long, and maybe there may be something. People often ask, well, why did it take so long? There may be something in current medical science that could explain it. And the church is always, you know, right, let's go down. We investigate according to the best medical science that there is.
Yeah.
And but after 30 years, we felt, and Marion felt, and we agreed that it was time to declare it a healing. Now, the church doesn't declare, you don't come out and declare a miracle. You declare a healing that could not be explained with current medical science. So that's what we did. That's what our bishop did. Our bishop has to do it officially, and he did that here. And so, you know, there's a whole load of right really from the beginning of the apparition, right immediately after the apparition, there have been recordings of cures of one kind or another, and we just record them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually were through our friends Ed and Teresa O'Brien, who have been involved, you know, in supporting Knock Shrine. We had Marion on as a guest, and there was something in her voice, in her presentation, that, you know, that really came through as somebody who was very humble, who indeed was not saying, you know, was not out front saying, guess who I am and guess what happened to me. And I think most people, traditionally, those who went to Knock, those who went as pilgrims, felt better leaving Knock. It is a mystical place, for lack of a better description. There is something about Knock that has such an effect on most people who go there.
There is indeed. We find that people, when people come here, they find peace, forgiveness through our confessional, and a lot of people go to our confessionals, and I call that our engine room, peace and forgiveness and healing and all those wonderful attributes that you assign to the faith that give hope to people, in no matter where they are in life, and that's what Knock offers.
I want to, and if you're uncomfortable with this topic, then I have to say, being from Matthew Mass and you from Lewisburg, I want to say tough, because you have, at this time of great insecurity and, you know, the lack of physical contact, you know, with those who would be in Knock, and those you took excuse the presentation here, but you took the show on the road for people in the parish, people in your parish, and for that matter in your region, that had to feel the terrible isolation, many growing up, you know, in the parish, and knowing the significance of Knock Shrine, of Our Lady. You, at some point, decided that nice and quietly, for those who were saying, would you ever come out and bless us, bless our houses, In hindsight, if you were to do that again, maybe you shouldn't have, you know, you should have prefaced this by saying, well, yeah, but don't spread it around the parish, because you want that. You wound up with a massive task. And visiting and blessing our reports are more than 1,000 homes. How did that start? How did undertaking?
How did it happen? Yes. Well, as you quite rightly put your finger on the pulse there. There were, during the lockdown here, huge numbers. Everybody was confined to their homes and houses. And coming up around Easter, we celebrated our Easter vigil and all the rest of it. Mm. And around Easter time, people love to take home bottles of water, holy water, and Easter water. Easter water in particular, that which is blessed in every parish on Holy Saturday night. And so that's the connection that people have. But we couldn't do that because you couldn't distribute water and all of that.
Right.
So and the weather in particular was beautiful. So I just put it in the new in a route around the parish that I would go to a townland, which is just a village grouping. And we'd have a number of them in the parish here, about maybe 20 or 30 townlands, so to speak. And I'd bless the townland. But as I went to the first townland, a grouping of houses, and people were coming out to the door. And I just went up and I said hello. I just, like, you know, how are you getting on? How are things going? And they just tell you what they feel and how they were. And I said, well, look, okay, I bless yourselves. Come to the doorway. I stayed at the gate. You leave your distance. I blessed the house and I blessed the family that were there. And then I was going to the next house and I found they were ringing ahead of each other. And so rather than ending up blessing townlands, I was practically going to every house. And I said, well, hold on a minute. Maybe this is what people want. And maybe this might be nice for people just to see somebody approach. And so I made up my mind very quickly, because you could see the way it was trending.
Yeah.
That I bless every single house in the parish. Now, I had the full week. I wasn't doing anything else myself. Everything was under lockdown. It was a glorious week of good weather and very warm and hot weather just after Easter. So for all of Easter week, I went around to every house in the parish, which is just roughly around 1,000 houses. And I took my time, started in the morning, finished in the evening. And it just went around like wildfire, and they all came out to the doors, and people loved it, and just to make that connection. And I think it was hugely important because they saw that their priest, and I'm talking generally now, that their priest was with them, that he understood their isolation, and that it was a connection, a way of connecting with them, saying to them, I haven't forgotten you. You're in our thoughts and prayers. You're there in our masses online, and I'm here to be with you at this time as far as I possibly could. And I think for myself personally, Adrian, I have to say, as long as I'm rector of the shrine and all that goes with that, it was one of the best things that I've ever done and one of the most enjoyable things that I've ever been able to do for the parish itself. Because as you can imagine, the workload of the shrine can overwhelm you in terms of what you'd love to do in the parish but can't because of sheer time and work of the shrine itself. Because I have a dual role. I'm a parish priest as well as the rector of the national shrine. So, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really got such a benefit myself. As much as they got, I got that back in aces in terms of graces. You know, so I really enjoyed. I really did enjoy. Now somebody obviously tweeted it or sent it out to media and it kind of got hold then and which was a bit slightly embarrassing but anyway that kind of got out then but I really enjoyed it, really did enjoy it.
Well, it was indeed and is, we can only imagine the word getting out and who you are in the parish and to have you come with the blessing, with the holy water, and again, forgive me, but the Knock holy water always had a special, very, very special meeting. You mentioned there people taking home holy water from Knock. We grew up with that. We grew up with, having holy water in the holy water fonts, which were inside practically every door in Ireland. It was tradition, but Knock holy water was very special, and it brought a lot of comfort and indeed ease of faith to, you know, to so many people. But I just want to double back for a moment on, as we speak about the Basilica, as we speak about Knock, as we speak of up to 1.5 million visitors, pilgrims to Knock. You must have some organization there. And we envision, as I would have no problem with in my day and in many of our listeners' day and growing up, priests by the ton, sisters, nuns there. How are you managing now with the massive shortage of priests in Ireland? Has that thinned out, even those clergy members who would love to be there? How much?
Yeah, that has, the older any priest over 70, because they're in a vulnerable status over here, would be self-isolating or looking after themselves a little bit more, so they wouldn't have public duty. So we've had quite a number of priests that would have been here, four in fact, that would have been in their mid-70s onwards, and they have gone back to their orders because we can't let them publicly hear confessions or say mass. So that does put us under strain. But we have approached a number of other orders and priests that may be in the country, they can't go back to their missions just yet, or they can't do a whole load of other things. So we've asked them to come here for a few weeks. We have curtailed our confessions between the hours of 12 and 3 every day. So we have enough priests for that. So we've about maybe 8 to 10 priests hearing confessions every day between the hours of 12 and 3, which is working at the moment currently. And it's a queuing system and all of that. But like going into the future, of course, like it'll be a tremendous problem. It'll be a massive problem. Because, like I say, confession really is the heart and soul of what goes on here spiritually at the shrine. This is where people come because of anonymity, because of the fact that they know that they can get confession, and because of the sacredness of the place that they just pour out their hearts. And as I say, it's the engine room. The confessional is the engine. That's where really the miracles take place. Are in the confessions. But it will be a problem going forward. It's something that I have to engage with my own archbishop, and sort of see where we're going to go in the next 5 to 10 years, and what that will mean sacramentally for the life of the church. You know. But that's a universal problem.
Yes.
Well, when I say actually it's not. It's not. It's a European, a North American, and an English-speaking problem. In Africa and South America, the numbers are growing all the time, as are the numbers of vocations in Southeast Asia. So, but it's a Western world problem, and it's something that we need to kind of really engage with.
Now, you have such a huge number of volunteers. In the absence, again, of having the priests in their great numbers, you have devotees to Knock, to the shrine, that seems to be ever growing. So the place, you're not alone walking around the place there wondering what jobs you can actually manage by yourself. Tell us about that great number I'm trying to think of the term, but anyway, we would call them volunteers.
Well, volunteers, yeah. They would be volunteers. These would be people. Well, we've a staff of a permanent staff, full-time staff of over 100 people, so they're paid staff. Then we have volunteers, three groups, separate groups of volunteers. They're parish volunteers, and that help us with people, our welcoming committee, really, for people arriving at the shrine during the season. And now currently help us with facilitating Mass, because without the volunteers, people there at our three Masses a day, we wouldn't be able to have Mass for people, because volunteers need to be there to show people to their seats and to properly distance people and all of that. That's the COVID situation. But we have our parish volunteers. Then we have our, what we call our Corgiwira in Irish, which are basically our Knock Shrine Society, which was set up in 1935. They had volunteers, and these are those guys. And they're here every Saturday and Sunday throughout the season. They're uniformed, and they're a very specific group of people, and they've been, like I say, in existence since 1935. That's another group. Yeah. And the third group are our young people, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, that were formed by our youth ministry here at the Shrine. They're called VACS, V-A-K-S, Volunteers at Knock Shrine. And these are young students that, again, work during the season and facilitate maybe people who are incapacitated or wheelchair-bound or all that. And they simply, they're nice, friendly young faces that welcome people to the Shrine, show them where everything is, answer all the questions in the world that people have, and really are a very youthful presence here, which we're delighted about. So they're our volunteers. And then during the season itself, of course, we have extra work for people. So sure. We've, in addition to our 100 staff, we have part-time staff for the season itself. So it takes us up to about maybe, well, between everything, about 200 people.
Amazing. Now, online, virtual, which we're pretty much left with, virtual and social media, can you just tell us about that at this time when...
Sure.
Most places on both sides of the Atlantic, having to do with gatherings, particularly in churches and whatever.
Yes.
How does that work?
Our online exploded, and that is the correct. And I'm not using that as an exaggeration. It absolutely exploded in terms of when people were cocooning and locked down. So they tuned, they got on, we have a lot of technology here, including webcams that we can broadcast a lot of things. So they tuned into Knock and connected with us and watched our Masses. And we were getting reports from all over the world, from North America, of course, from New York,
sure.
But as far away as Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. And as I said, just with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, I said that if Ho Chi Minh himself knew that there was somebody in his city watching a Catholic Mass, I think he'd be whirling around in the grave.
My God.
But it was an extraordinary thing. So we had a huge online presence, and then we invited people to light candles and send in petitions to us, and we put all our bookshops, everything online,
yeah.
And that just exploded. In fact, it kept us going during the lockdown itself. And that presence then has continued in a lesser form now, because people in various different parts of the world have gone back to their local churches, which is proper, right, and good.
Yeah.
But we still have a very high presence online. And all of that technology was upgraded for when we refurbished the Basilica and when we upgraded facilities on the Shrine and when we prepared for the papal visit. We, as I said to somebody recently, the technology was to such a standard I could nearly launch a satellite from the back of the Basilica.
Right.
But we needed it. We needed it. We needed every bit of it. And it came in, so handy and so well for the lockdown itself.
And not to, again, as I say, most of us who have scattered around the world and say, surely to God, they can do something. you know, for here it is this, you know, the 15th of August, that Sunday, that weekend of the 15th of August, and the millions of people over the century, or over the decades at least anyway, who have come and made that a part of their life. There's an event that is taking place tomorrow, and that's when Knock Shrine, your good self, in collaboration with the Mayo Association of Philadelphia and Mayo County Council, you know, say hello to Peter Hines, but don't say I said it. He and the great number of people are, you know, again, online, not getting shut out. So there is an opportunity, again, not to break, you know, that tremendous tradition. That's coming from that's coming from Philadelphia. And it's 6 o'clock Irish time, 1 o'clock here in, say, the East
Your
Coast,
time, yeah.
I can figure,
yeah.
in our time. That is something that is very special, and I'm sure a lot of people will want to participate in that. You know?
Yes, it grew out of a connection between Mayo County Council here and Peter Hines and his staff, to connect with the Irish groups, especially in Philadelphia. So there was groups that want to set up a shrine to Our Lady of Knock in the shrine of the Miraculous Medal in Philadelphia. And so they want to do, this is what they're planning. And just to kick off that plan, they wanted to connect with ourselves here and have a message sent over from us, which we did. And we also sent them a lovely presentation of, which is very rare and which we've kept, but just for special occasions we do this. We have an original stone of the gable wall, and we took a fragment of that and made it into a presentation so that they could have something physically from the shrine here over for this mass tomorrow, which they've just received, as well as just making that connection. They want to, of course, you know, in time, please God, we can connect in reality, like we can go over to them or they can visit us here at the shrine. But that mass takes place then tomorrow. And we are delighted to be associated with it. And we're very grateful to Mayor County Council for all the work that they've done in that. And just as a little bit of an aside there, Peter Hines has retired now from his position here. I don't know whether you knew that, Adrian.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's retired.
That's good. I can take him off my Christmas card list now.
Fantastic guy, though. Like he really put heart and soul into everything that he was doing for Mayo, and it's a, like, you know, he really stood out as a fantastic worker, a great representative of Mayo, and a tireless worker in terms of promotion of Mayo. And we wish him all the very best, himself and his wife Catherine and his family. But the connection that has been established with Pittsburgh is a wonderful one, and we're delighted to be associated with it.
Father Richard, I'll again let you back, but to you know, what is obviously a very busy schedule. Again, I would like you know, from this interview, to let people connect with Knock. And your website, because there's more information on there than we could ever cover in an interview. Your site, Knock Shrine.
Yes, the website is very simple, www.knockshrine.ie. Just put in Knock Shrine into Google, and it'll come straight up there. And everything that you want to know about us, from history to our services, to everything that you want to know about us, is on that website. You can light candles, you can send in petitions to us, and you can even donate if you want to.
Absolutely. Well,
and,
at this point, that's good, too.
Which would be great.
Thank you. And again, if you can send a blessing to to our listeners, and particularly here, you know, I have to hang out with Sonia Sheridan, so any blessing that you can send this way.
You're a lucky man. You're a lucky man. You're blessed already. And I say that, and I know Anya's listening into us there. He's blessed already, Anya, triply. So thank you both to yourself and to Anya for all the work that you do too, Adrian. You've been an ambassador for years and years and years, and both yourself and Anya have done tremendous work in terms of connecting, keeping that connection alive and well. And we thank you sincerely for it, and we give you every blessing of God to keep both of you safe and sound and well at this time. And indeed, to all your listeners who are listening in, please keep safe and well, and may God bless you all.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, boy. I tell you, what a great, on this very special day, not only for Irish people who grew up in Ireland, but for so many people who indeed do celebrate this day throughout the world. We thank Father Richard Gibbons, and like I said, Google Knock Rhyme. That brings us to the end of a program, friends, but one which we hope, of course, you have enjoyed.